Extemporaneous speaking is difficult a lot of times because you'll draw three questions and you won't know squat about any of the questions. You'll have no context, no information, and you have to draw from a rather large source of information, a bunch of different articles, and try to figure out some sort of answer to the question. So what I want to do is give you some practical tips to make yourself a credible speaker and to give yourself a nuanced presentation and thesis so that you can have a real impact. I've derived some of this from personal experience as well as talking to a lot of parent judges about what they appreciate and what they like to see within an extemporaneous speech. So we're going to start off first with the analysis of the question itself, or as I make a very lame LD joke, a questionational analysis. Okay, the idea of how do you actually evaluate the question that you have. Now, a lot of extemp questions are asked in a yes or no format. So, for instance, one of the questions that I got during my regional championship was the question, will Heathrow's inability to capitalize on increased traffic impact the economy? And it was dealing with the Heathrow Airport. That is a very boring question overall. It's a very dry question, and it's also a very straightforward question. It's either yes or no. And unfortunately, most extemporaneous speakers, they never get beyond the yes or no question. They deal with dealing with the subject matter itself and finding the conclusion itself. And they provide all the information to the judge, and they say, so, yes or no. And in a very similar sense, extemporaneous speaking and the questions that are being asked are not just questions that are being asked. You have to view why they're being asked and what the motive behind it is. So, for instance, with the Heathrow example, that was obviously a very boring topic, but it was the only topic that we had any information in my club's box. So I was forced to take this question. And the way that I interpreted it and the way that I was able to make it a winning speech was I was able to explain to the judges, I say, the answer to the question itself is very basic, but what's more important than this is asking and answering the underlying question about what is wrong with Britain's economy that they can't capitalize on different areas that would provide economic growth. Ultimately, capitalizing on Heathrow's increase in passenger traffic is not going to impact their economy directly, but it is a key example of their inability and their bureaucratic failure in all other areas to stabilize their economy and to provide a real economic stability. And that was my thesis. I was able to go much more nuanced and much more in-depth because I didn't settle for just, yes, it's going to help economic growth, or no, it's not going to help economic growth. That very original first question is really just the starting point, and it should just be the starting point for what you're dealing with. So with that in mind, I want to talk about five different types of thesis statements that you can make. And I think you guys should try to employ all of these in different areas. So we're going to go ahead and just go through these one at a time. The first one is called natural explanation. And a natural explanation works like this. X because of why. Okay? So here's an example. The US should attack Iran because the just war theory authorizes attack. That's X because of Y. Or the center of evolution debate is based on escape from supernatural causality. That is X because of Y. See how that works? This is the most basic type of thesis statement. And hopefully, at the very least, you guys are employing thesis statements like this. You should have, you know, a statement and a warrant behind that statement, obviously. But it gets a lot more nuanced as we talk about. The next one is basic problem. Basic problem is don't X because X does Y. So, for instance, abolish the death penalty because it executes the innocent. Or, don't shop at Walmart because they have inappropriate business practices. See, those are both don't do something because doing something like that results in this, right? There's also compare and contrast. Compare and contrast says X was thought because of Y, but actually Z. This is getting a little complicated, as you guys can tell. So let me give you some examples. Some believe courage is a noble goal for youth to learn, but courage is behind most of the major atrocities in history. Or most believe the Iraq war was to stop weapons of mass destruction or spread democracy, but it is a credible theory that corporate interests wanted to profit from the business of war. You see how that all ties into this? You compare and contrast what was thought, but what reality was. And that's a compare and contrast thesis. And those are really, I think, very, very useful, especially in extemporaneous speaking. And these all, just sort of as a disclaimer, you guys can probably figure this out, all these thesis statements, they don't just operate for extemporaneous speaking. They operate for all types of speaking. But these are going to specifically benefit you in extemporaneous speaking because with a limited amount of time, too many extempers, and really the extempers I believe never get to the next level, are the ones that become satisfied with here's my yes or no answer, and here's a bunch of articles that prove this true. And we want to get you beyond that. We want you to be a news analyst. You are the person that is connecting the pieces and showing the judge what reality is and why the world works together the way that it works. The next one is problem solution. For those TPers in the room, you probably already have a good idea of what this is. Problem solution says, stop X, problem with Y. So the problems with American culture must be solved by improving education of the masses from bad to better. The weaknesses of American culture must be solved through widespread liberal arts education. Get rid of X problem with Y solution. Okay? And then, and this is very effective, I think, in extemporaneous speech, because a lot of times people just talk about a problem and they don't show an out, a positive spin on things. And so I always try, no matter how glum the topic, try to end on a positive note. Something that can be done from a personal level, from a government level, and show how there is sort of a light at the end of the tunnel. That's not always easy to do, especially with some of the issues our country is facing, but you should try at the very least. And the last one we're going to talk about is comparative advantage. Comparative advantage is X is good, but Y is better. So, for instance, while Facebook connects families and friends, it would be improved with instant video chat to elongate conversations. Something is good, but we can make it better. That is, if you ever study policy, the most viable alternative for anything. When you evaluate policy and politics, this is a great way to go. I use this for a couple of winning speeches on immigration in which I was in the same room as other people debating immigration reform and giving speeches on immigration reform and extemp. And I won out against all of them. And the main reason, at least according to the ballots that I can derive, was the fact that I didn't just talk about how there was good things that are being done, but I provided all the other things that could take it over the top. So they weren't just hearing, look, reform is being made, this is good, this is positive, but I was saying, yes, we've taken a step, let's look at the end goal and really the steps that are needed to get to that end goal. It was much more nuanced and in-depth, and it gave the judges something unique, something that they didn't usually get. So with these thesis statements in mind, you can begin applying those in hopefully all of your speeches. You should be able to apply a nuanced thesis and go beyond just what the question asks to what are the different contributing factors that relate to the topic? Why is the question being asked? Why does it matter? And what sort of impact is the yes or no answer going to have on all those different factors? If it's yes, what does that mean for this part of the economy? If it's no, what does it mean for this part of the economy? All of that will do two things. First of all, it'll give you a nuanced and in-depth speech. But second of all, if you have a lack of information, it's really handy to be able to know how different topics tie in to other topics, because then it gives you an entire new category of information to tap into. So for instance, when I understand the impact that environmental policy has on the economy, when I get a question about environmental regulations, I don't just pull into my environmental folder. I have an entire subset within my regulations and economic impacts folder that deals specifically with environmental impacts. And because I knew that from heart from debating environmental policy way back in the day, I was able to give, you know, $7.1 trillion impacts to economic regulations that I was seeing, and I was able to tell the judge about that. And that was way cooler and more interesting than just talking about the cause itself. I was able to talk about the effect as well. The second thing I want to talk about is a balance. And now this kind of comes into sort of the politics of the leagues that we're competing in. And it's a delicate balance between teaching and appealing. And that's a good thing. We should be opinionated, right? But our audience doesn't always understand everything about an issue. And if you've taken the time to research issues, you may understand more about an issue than someone else does. Whether it be what really is, you know, causing economic downturn, or why immigration reform isn't going to be effective, why, and sometimes, you know, some of my toughest thesis statements were dealing specifically with how conservative Republicans were wrong in different areas of politics. When you have a thesis statement like that, it's kind of difficult because you're kind of telling the judge straight to their face that they're wrong a lot of times, right? So there is a balance between teaching someone and informing them of something new and appealing to what they already know. I do a lot of work in film, and one of the key concepts when it comes to film is dealing with getting your audience to buy into a premise. Now, there's a certain level that they can suspend reality or suspend what they know to be true or think they know it to be true in order to accept information. So when you see, for instance, science fiction, whether it be Star Wars or something like that, you know, we're all willing to suspend what we think about reality in order to buy into the premise. But if they continue to do more and more absurd things, eventually, like, okay, this is way too ridiculous, and you stop buying into the premise, right? It stops being effective. The same thing is true of any type of informative speaking. If you're teaching your audience and your judges about an issue that you know they have very strong political views about, you need to make sure that you're balancing teaching and appealing. So you need to appeal to some sort of base level and come to a common ground. This is something that's oftentimes employed in debate, and one of the main reasons why I was able to transfer this over to extemporaneous speaking so well. And that is that in order to have any discussion and have any dialogue about any topic, you first have to establish common ground with your audience. Common ground. So you have to agree on some sort of premise at some point. So when it came to the issue of the Republican Party and why they lost the last two elections, you know, my thesis statement, to be blunt, was because they're doing literally everything wrong. That's not something that they're going to buy into. Judges are going to buy into very well. And so what I had to do is I had to tweak that in order for it to be a balance between appealing and teaching. And so I would start out my speech by talking about, look, regardless of political views, we see that the Republican Party has not been effective from a political standpoint. They have not been winning the elections. And so the major question we have to ask is, in order for us to get these views and these stances that we believe are politically correct across, we have to first gain the right platform. We don't have that platform. In this speech, we're going to be looking at specifically how can we as the Republican Party gain the right platform and have the right stance moving into the next election. And so I appeal to the fact that I'm, as the speaker, I'm trying to accomplish their goals and their political views. But at the same time, I'm teaching them about why everything they've been doing previously is wrong. You have to balance that, because if you don't and you just say, you're wrong, here's why, they're not going to listen. You have to establish that common ground. So you have to balance teaching and appealing to your audience when it comes to any sort of significant political issue. Another issue would be global warming. I've talked extensively in extemporaneous speak about the issue of global warming, and I tend to be a little bit not quite conservative on the issue of global warming. I believe that it's something that we need to monitor. I don't believe it's, you know, the world's about to collapse, but I believe that it's an issue that we need to deal with to some extent. So when I talk about that, I don't just say global warming is real, you're all wrong, because that once again doesn't appeal. I say we're called to be good stewards of the earth. We all know this and accept this. With that in mind, I believe the wisest thing we have to keep in mind when dealing with global warming and environmental regulations to protect the earth is that we have to balance looking out for our economic interests and for the well-being of, you know, the economy, and being good stewards of the earth, and having an honest and open assessment of the impacts that our actions have on our environment. That way, I appeal to the fact that, you know, so they all agree with the good steward principle, and I'm able to appeal to that, and then by appealing to that, educate them about some of the real life implications, the real world impacts that I have information about dealing with global warming. Because I was able to get them to buy into the premise, they're accepting of the information itself. That's very important because I believe a lot of really valuable information that you may have gets lost a lot of times because you're just trying to prove that you're smarter than the judges. And that is never an effective communication tool. It is never effective to try to just intimidate your audience into believing you because you seem to have more information than they do. The next thing I want to talk about is establishing credibility. Credibility is one of those things that starts from the moment, or it doesn't start from the moment you walk into the room. People judge you from the moment that you appear with an eyesight, right? With that in mind, within a speech, the way that you structure your words and the way that you choose to present information is going to radically change how the judges and how the audience views you as a speaker. One of my favorite extemporaneous speakers, who was my debate partner this previous year, was Blair Bayless. And she did two things that were absolutely spectacular when it came to establishing credibility. One of them I'm not expecting or asking you to do because it's ridiculously crazy and over the top. But the other one I think is something that you all should utilize. The first thing that she did was that she didn't use a note card in extemporaneous speaking. She memorized all of her citations and all of her information, and then she just went into the room and she would list off like 16 citations during her speech, and it was incredible, but it's very difficult. And I don't think any of you are probably at that point yet. But the other thing that she did very effectively that I appreciated was the fact that she did not just prove her points with information, but rather she used the information, the articles, and everything that she took from her box to back up what she said. So there are two different ways that information can be presented, and this works in debate, this works in every type of speaking. If you have a quote from some person that proves the point you're saying to be true, too often the way that that is presented is, this brings me to my next point, and that is, for instance, global warming is real. Here's an expert that says global warming is real. Now, that gets the information across, but it doesn't build my credibility as a speaker. What does is saying this. We're going to look at the real-world implications of global warming. Now, what we need to understand is that global warming is caused by these three separate things. Then you go into, with your own wording, an explanation of what the issue is. It may be just an explanation that you pull from reading through that piece of evidence, that article a couple times, but you put it into your own words first. You explain it in your own words, and then say, let's take a look at a quote that simply proves this to be true. Then provide the expert backing. What does that do? It changes it from you backing up the expert to the expert backing you up. That dramatically increases your credibility because it shows that you have an understanding of the topic. You're not simply pulling together a bunch of Wikipedia citations to prove your point true. That is very important. And far too often, the credibility of speakers is loses a massive opportunity to increase because they just go into each point and say, let's move into my B point. Let's take a look at a piece of evidence or an article that proves this to be true. All right, let's move on to my next point. That is not extemporaneous speaking. Extemporaneous speaking is you as the student analyzing the information, interpreting it, and telling the judge why it matters. So when I would give a piece of an article, when I would talk about some statistic, I would talk about the point, then I would explain what the point is telling us, then I'd provide the information, and I'd give detailed analysis about what that means afterwards. That meant that everything about what I said was the information backing up and boosting my credibility rather than me simply hiding behind my articles. You never want to hide behind your articles and your information. The next thing is speaking from the judge's perspective. Now, this was very interesting to me. How many of you guys have gotten some wacky question about the Euro crisis or some random European country that you know nothing of? Yeah, it's happened to me so many times. And we tend to avoid those like the Black Plague, right? Because they're boring, right? Well, one of the parent judges that I talked to from my club, she was talking about judging extemp, and she's judged extemp quite extensively over the last couple of years. And she said, in a round in which I have a couple speakers that are equal as far as presentation, and I am equally impressed by them, the tiebreaker for me is always the difficulty of the subject. I will look at that sheet, and the judges know specifically what questions, the three questions that you got. She said, I will look at that sheet and decide, did they choose the toughest question that they could? And if they didn't, that knocks them down a peg, at least within a tiebreaker. That is kind of astonishing to me, but yet it's very important for us to keep in mind, and I think it's an accurate and in a wise decision on her part. Extemporaneous speaking is not about taking the easiest question, and it's especially not about lecturing your audience about issues and topics that they already know pretty much everything about. Okay? So whether it be immigration reform or why Obama is a bad president or any of that, they've heard that a million times. They could probably give you that speech without any prep time, right? So why are we spending 30 minutes of preparation to give our audience the same exact spiel that they've probably heard already three times during the tournament and a million times over the year when we're there for an educational experience? You want to be educating your audience and your judges. So tackle difficult subjects because the judges will appreciate that. If they come out knowing why Yugoslavia and has a direct impact on European economy and the Euro crisis, they're going to come out with actual information that's unique, and that's going to stand out not just in their minds when they're making their decision, but also when they look at tiebreakers. When they have to decide between someone who talked about how the Republican Party and the Democrat Party can't come to an agreement on immigration reform and a detailed analysis about Yugoslavia's, Euro crisis, what are they going to choose? They're going to choose the more difficult subject, 9 times out of 10. So speak from the judge's perspective and understand that it's not just about making your prep time and your speech as easy as possible. It's about providing information, and the judges do appreciate new information. And then make things real life applicable. Let me give you an example. This was one of my favorite speeches to do, and because it was funny, and I enjoy being funny. So, this was one of the oddest questions I've ever gotten, and the question was, is it time to try Paul Krugman's alien invasion stimulus? Now, I don't know if any of you guys are familiar with this, but Paul Krugman is a very interesting individual. And he has said at one point that one way to stimulate the economy and get it back on track would be if there was an alien invasion. He said that if there was an alien invasion, it would stimulate the economy. Craziest theory of all time, but it actually held some water. And I dealt with an issue because I had chosen the question. I knew there was what I wanted to do because it was just funny. And whenever I can, I go for the funny questions. But I needed a way to make it make sense to the judges. because it's sort of a complicated, very strange economist, you know, who has his mind a little messed with, I think.
Nobel Prize winner too.
Nobel Prize winner. He's an intelligent guy, but he has wacky theories. And so I had to do two things. First of all, I had to make it fun, and I had to make it simple and easy. And so let me first explain what the premise of the theory is, and then I'll go into it. The premise of the theory is that if there was an alien invasion, it would spark massive new economic sectors throughout the world. When realizing that there is intelligent life outside of just the world, and that we have to have, you know, defense mechanisms, we have the ability to interact with them, and at some point we have to be able to transport and, you know, have commerce with them, etc., that is going to create entirely new sectors within the economy globally. So therefore, if we had made contact with aliens or had an alien invasion of some type, that would actually spark the economy. Now that actually works theoretically. If you guys actually think about it, it does. And that's a very basic overview of how it works. But that's the point that I was trying to make. And I was trying to go obviously more detailed and more nuanced with it. But that makes no sense to the judges. And I wanted to make sure that it made sense. And so what I talked about in the speech was my thesis was essentially talking about how an alien invasion theoretically makes sense, but it also doesn't make sense because, like, why are we discussing an alien invasion when there's obviously better ways of fixing it? And the reason why is because I believe that our country has neglected the difficult methods of fixing the economy for the easy methods. So my thesis was that the easiest method is not the best method. And sometimes you have to start from scratch, you have to start over, and you have to build things from the beginning. And it may be a long process, but it's the only thing that's going to actually provide any lasting solution. So I talked about was something real world, something that they could relate to. Like when your mom tells me, when my mom told me to clean my room. And instead of cleaning my room, I just shoved everything under the bed. I'm betting at least a couple of guys have done this before.
Yeah. Not only guys.
Not only guys. There we go. Well, good. This is a very basic real-world example, which I had three mom judges for this round. And so it was a perfect story to start with. And I said, look, this solution was the easiest solution. But it wasn't a long-term solution. In the same way, our country, when trying to solve its economic problems, has always gone for the easiest solution, assuming that it's the best. But at some point, we have to acknowledge the fact that all these easy solutions, whether it be, you know, stimulus packages, or whether it be hoping for an alien invasion, is not going to solve the problem itself. And at some point, we have to cut everything away, all of our crazy ideas and theses, regardless of whether or not they may have some legitimacy, and get back to the basics. At some point, we have to clean up the mess that we made. And that was my thesis, and that was the story that I began and I ended with. And because I made it real world applicable, I didn't have to spend a bunch of time during the rest of my extemp speech explaining the principles, because all the principles could be derived from you make a mess, you clean it up. Because of that, I was able to give a very nuanced and complicated speech about how these economic principles operated and how an alien invasion hypothetically could work, but why the current economic stimulus plans were not working. And I didn't have to go into a bunch of detail. I didn't have to belabor the point. I didn't have to confuse my judge because they had a very clear and simplistic picture of what we were dealing with. We were dealing with a messy room, and we were dealing with a kid who was trying to find the easiest way out every single time, and it wasn't working. And because I was able to paint a picture like that, it was able to work effectively.